step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne. Happy New Year to all of you out there listening. I'm Taylor Payne and I'm joined by George Corgan and Chris Woff. Happy New Year, chaps. Happy New Year, Chris.
Happy New Year, Taylor. 2026. We've all got here. We've managed to get through and get here.
We made it.
Yeah, I mean, I was in bed long before midnight last night. Went to see some family and they were all staying up till midnight, but then I dragged James away. He was very reluctant.
It's great when you've got kids, isn't it?
Because you go, yeah.
Oh, I've got to get the kids home. Yeah. I really do. I'm sorry. I can't stay.
So I was in bed long before midnight, but I got up, went for a run this morning, and then I had a lovely almond croissant to start the year from FAB Fab Bakery in, I think, the Fenham and Gosforth. So yeah, just showered for them. It was very, very nice. So yeah, I basically made sure that whichever calories I burned off, I then put on a heck of a lot more.
Heck.
Afterwards. So yeah,
Heck of a lot more.
I did say that. I said that. Definitely for it. Just says Colkin on your thing here as well, doesn't it, George Colkin? It says Colkin on your screen here.
But it said put your name, and I just thought, yeah, I'm just going to put my surname
Colkin.
2026, an end to intimacy.
How are you, George? How is your?
Well, I was also in bed long before midnight. That's because I'm grumpy
and old,
and I will be starting 2026 pretty much the same way that I start every year. My philosophy for 2026 shall be, and I quote Rick Mail here, never ever bloody anything ever.
Nice.
If you live your life by that mantra,
I like that.
You won't go far wrong. Let me tell you.
You won't make many mistakes. Definitely not.
How about you, Taylor? How was your night?
Oh, it was wonderful, Chris, as you can imagine. Being a semi-professional musician on New Year's Eve is just the greatest thing in the world. And I'd like to leave it there, if that's possible.
Were you allowed to have a beverage or not?
No, I was driving the car. So I was... I got finished work fairly early last night compared to usual. And I came back through the Tyne Tunnel. I went and seen my mum and dad. And I saw a New Year with my mum and dad. So that was nice.
Nice.
Yes, I think I saw it in the Tyne Tunnel. I was going to say,
I was just sat in the middle of the Tyne Tunnel. Thought it's as good a place as any, isn't it, Chris? You know, underground, away from the world. Have we got any resolutions for the New Year, chaps? George, any New Year's resolutions?
Well, never ever bloody anything ever. I mean, again, but that is more a kind of life motto.
It's like a mantra.
Do I go public on this? I think I'll probably do. I'm so disappointed and annoyed with myself. But I apply for the London Marathon every year in the very firm hope that I don't get in, and I punch the air when I don't get in. I've done 5 marathons. They've nearly broken me. But anyway, I am committed to running the London Marathon this year, and I'm going to go on loan from the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation for one time only and run it for the Alan Shearer Foundation. So there we go. I've laid it out there. So the next couple of months are going to be pretty brutal. But I'm going to do it. I'm going to try and do it.
Lovely stuff. How about you, Chris?
Well, nothing quite as dramatic as that. I mean, I feel like I need to see more away victories from Newcastle United in the Premier League, which means I need to be even more, perhaps more selective about which ones that I go
no,
to.
No, it means less selective. That's the whole point. Jesus Christ, is this the way you're starting? I need to be more... So if I never go away from home, I might see them win more. That makes sense.
Just pick one really easy away game every year.
Which is Burnley every year. I'm going to Wolves in a couple of weeks, which has got disaster written all over it, hasn't it?
You'd be all right. I've decided I'm going to give up. That's it.
You're right.
I'm going to give up.
Yeah, that's all I'm doing. Excellent. Yeah, great.
Anyway, right then, chaps, let's crack on. Don't forget, you can pay £3 a month to listen to our ad-free service or £5 a month to unlock our extra time service with additional content. To join our burgeoning subscriber community, please go to podnatine.support and cast.fm for more information. We are also still looking for sponsorship for the show as well to help us make 2026 Pod on the Tine's best year ever. If you or someone you know would like to get involved with sponsoring the show in any way, shape or form, please drop us an email at podonthetine@gmail.com. Right then, chaps, let's do a couple of quick hits before we crack into the main show. The transfer window, Chris, is now officially open.
It is, to nobody cheered ever on that regard. I would not be sort of setting off party poppers in the expectation that Newcastle are going to do loads and loads, and I said a heck of a lot, but I didn't because I stopped for George there, of business this month. But if they are going to do something, it's probably likely to be defence, left-back maybe, midfield potentially. We know they really like Keith Smith at AZ Alkmaar. That's going to be very difficult, the midfielder. They also like Kevin Danwar at Auxerre, and then left-back-wise, Diane Matherly at Toulouse. But it's probably needs exits for any incomings to arrive, so I wouldn't expect loads of business, maybe one or two max.
Antonio Cordero is off to Cadiz.
He is, yes. His loan spell at Westerlo has not been successful, really. He's played only 87 minutes of league football in Belgium, and so he is now going on to Cadiz on loan for the rest of the season. 19 years old, he joined on a free transfer from Malaga in the summer, so hopefully he gets a bit more football there.
Chris, is Will Osula heading to Frankfurt?
I'd say probably not. You can't rule out entirely. He nearly went on deadline day in the summer. Frankfurt still like him. I think he's one of a number of targets for them, but Newcastle, the noises at the moment are that he probably will stay, potentially leaves in the summer instead. He's been out with a foot injury anyway, so it would require Newcastle probably to sign a forward for Will Osula to go. I would say 75-25 he stays.
And finally, George, Newcastle United submit new academy plans.
Yes, Newcastle have submitted planning permission for a £1 million revamp of their academy. Huge amount of work has already gone there post-takeover. They're at bursting point, really, in terms of staff. These new latest plans are about upgrading the players' lounge, new physio offices, and better toilets.
Lovely, we all need that, absolutely. Right then, chaps, let's crack on properly. 2025 was an extraordinary year for lots of reasons, wasn't it? Finally winning a trophy, getting back into the Champions League, some astonishing games of football. There were also some bleak moments as well. So what are we most glad to see the back of? Let's start with the positive, Chris. What are we most glad to see the back of? I presume the away form is going to be the big one, isn't it?
You can tell that George did this running order, the fact that he's got the negative.
What misery shall we embrace first today, boys?
Well, no, I think we've talked a lot about positive things. I think this is just a way for us to sort of look back a little bit on Burnley, which was a positive result after all, but it contained kind of a lot of the stuff that we've seen a bit too much of this season.
I mean, so, I feel like I've watched that match 5, 6, 7 times this season, you know.
Yeah.
Well, they won this one, though, so that was different in that regard.
Very true.
But I think turning the page, I think this idea of turning the page, so, and, you know, let's face it, the second half of the year has not been wholly upbeat, has it? So let's turn my positivity is to turn the page on a difficult second half of 2025, and then it's in our rearview mirror. That's a positive thing to do.
Do you want to say turning the page again, just to make sure we all understand?
Yeah,
that's what you want to do.
Yeah,
good.
Well, on the away form, for those who didn't hear the extra time matchday pod, I was actually during the game that I hadn't actually seen Newcastle win in the Premier League live away from home throughout the entirety of 2025 until the very last match. So yeah, the away form, it stretched really from March, April time, post cup final. Really, Newcastle really has struggled on the road. They've had two big victories. If you see scoreline, I suppose 7-2 is the aggregate in the two wins they've actually had on the road so far this season, but they're the only two matches in which they've scored more than once in a single away game. They've gone five times they haven't even scored away from home this season. It has to just be the start, and that's basically what I wrote after the match, is that there had to be, it was an end point for 2025 and Newcastle ended on a high, but it has to be a starting point really for Newcastle growing and improving on the road, because they unfortunately have largely the hardest fixtures for them historically and generally in the Premier League at the moment, the best teams to go on the road into 2026. So yes, hopefully it's good riddance to a year where Newcastle only won 6 of 19 away games in the Premier League.
How important does that win feel, George? I mean, it feels massive in that it came right at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Newcastle have to kick on from there, don't they?
No, it felt huge. It felt huge in its own context. I think, you know, just going into that match, there was that feeling of must win around it. I mean, I just, you know, they just had to win. And I think you could feel that tension as you're watching it, can't you? I mean, you can see that the players know that they've got to win. And of course, when you have that sort of pressure, when you're, you know, when you've become familiar to not winning or to losing, you can just see the way confidence is affected. They, you know, they're just not playing with that self-belief. You know, they can do good things in matches, and they did. There were plenty of good moments in the matches. But every time something goes wrong, you just have that horrible feeling it's going to slip away because it's happened too often. That's just human nature, and it's human nature for a team that's going through a difficult spell, which Newcastle have been. So it felt massive. You know, they won it, and ultimately that is the only thing that really matters, except, you know, they wiped their feet on the way out of that victory, didn't they? I think that's the kind of phrase. But they had to do it. They did. It's taken them to 10th in the table. That does look a lot better. It's not going to stay that way for very long, I shouldn't imagine. But, you know, it gives them something to cling on to. And then when you're now looking forward to January, as we'll come on to, there are now a lot of home games and, you know, winnable home games. So they found a way. They had to find a way, and they did it.
There's been some recurring themes, Chris, hasn't there? What is it about Newcastle United and defending a lead, or Newcastle United and taking control in a game? It's just not there, is it?
No, it isn't, particularly away from home. I mean, Newcastle have dropped 13 points from winning positions in the Premier League so far this season. They've dropped a further 5 in the Champions League. It's a consistent theme, and you can see, I think it's become psychological.
Totally.
The players seem, despite going 2-0 up after 7 minutes, and I mean, I've heard a lot of and read a lot of stuff about Newcastle brilliant for 7 minutes. I think that's harsh on them, actually. I thought for the first half of the first half, they could and should have had more goals. They should have scored far more throughout the match in general.
Yeah.
But from about the 25-minute mark onwards until about 75 minutes, that word control, they had absolutely none of it. The game became chaotic, became largely open. Both teams had big chances at either end. The issue Newcastle have at the moment is when they do have a lot of the ball, a lot of territory, you can name just about every single match in which that's happened this season. Bournemouth away, Leeds away, Sunderland away to a certain degree without the chances. Man United, these games, they have a lot of the ball, they have a lot of territory. So in the Man United game, have a lot of crosses and even shots, but don't actually look like scoring. At Burnley, significantly different. They have a lot of opportunities. They look like scoring, probably should have scored 4 or 5, but also could have conceded 2 or 3 themselves. And that's the problem. They haven't got that balance there. And I think that's they're just scratching around for that away from home. I think there are a lot of problems. It was merely the start. It's hilarious, the sort of response that you get to what you write about or say about after a game, because after the Burnley one, a complete contrast on some sides. Some people thought we're far too positive. Some people thought we're far too negative. And it's like the you can take whatever you want from that. My overriding feeling was Newcastle found a way to actually win an away match. Now, that has to be the start, as I said. But if you'd have asked me at 50 minutes when Newcastle were hunkering down and looked like they were going to concede, I thought they were going to throw that away. I didn't think they were going to get a win. They found a way to get that victory. And as I say, if they build from that, I think that's a positive. They just had to find a way, any way, anyhow to win, and they did.
Yeah, I think we said this on our Extra Time show, Chris. It's like if you'd offered any of us 3-1 before kickoff, we'd have all said, oh yeah, definitely, oh, yeah, have that, yeah. But if you could have offered the way to go about a 3-1, it would not have been like that. You know, a word that's been used a lot around Newcastle this season has been mentality. I'm not sure that's necessarily a sort of helpful word, because it's been built, and you know, this is something I talked to Howe about a couple of weeks ago. I think it's become sort of something else. I think it is about confidence, though, and self-belief. Now, normally, I think if you go 2-0 up in a match, you would tend to think that's more or less game over. But not for Newcastle, because we saw what happened against Chelsea. And I think it was similar against Burnley. Now, I suppose the difference is it's come so early in the game, you know, 7 minutes, they're 2 goals up. And that's very early to start thinking about game over. But when you're in the, you know, when you're in this, you know, this run of games where you've got game after game after game, And part of you must be sort of thinking about self-preservation. It's like, do we step off? Do we take, you know, do we go down a notch? Do we just try and close this game out from this point? Or do we push to win? Do we push to get another goal? And I don't think that's about, you know, in-game management necessarily. I don't think it's about tactics. I think it's just when you're not in great form and when you've seen leads slip away before, I think it's just becomes kind of tricky, stick or twist. It's that
it's almost
kind of
not like a decision's been made to do that, is it? It's not like Eddie Howe's went, right, everybody get behind the ball, we'll defend it. It's almost an unconscious thing that's taken over these players. When they do get in that situation, they suddenly take that step back because they're worried about something going wrong, because it has gone wrong so many times already this season. So yeah, it's just like a natural reaction. It's weird.
Yeah. It's like, we're 2-0 up, this is a strong position, we should win, but we know chances are we're going to fuck it up somehow.
Yeah.
And it sort of almost becomes self-fulfilling. And I agree with Chris, you know, the fact they saw it out and they've ended up, you know, you look at the scoreline and think that's actually, a slightly more comfortable victory than it was. But the fact they saw it out and finished strongly, hopefully then that gives them belief and they can draw upon that. Okay, we've shown we can do it. You know, you take that into your next game. It does mean that they need to win, you know, they need to win consecutive matches, which they've not been great at this season, of course, but, you know, do that. And then those positive messages become reinforced. Oh, okay, we can do this. We can do this. And so it was massive. It was massive for everybody at the club. It was massive for the manager, and it was big. It was big for the players too.
Well, one thing I am looking forward to seeing the back of is only having one available striker. Johan Wisser gets a goal on his second full debut, Chris. That's quite impressive, isn't it? I'm not sure how you even do that.
Are you touching wood, crossing your fingers as you say that, only having one forward? And
I mean, touch whatever needs to be touched, Chris, in order for that to happen.
yeah, it's a very stylistically different centre-forward, but to have the ability to then bring on Voldemort for the last 15 minutes, as Newcastle did, to be able to play one in midweek, one at the weekend, and at some stage potentially play the two of them together, although I don't think we're going to see that consistently for long spells of matches, particularly given Newcastle's hectic schedule, and particularly while Willasula isn't available. Howe has to manage the players. He has to keep them available where they can, and I think Jan Wisser, particularly away from home, just gives something different, ability to run in behind, and then the poachers sort of finish. The fact that both of his goals have been from a combined, I don't know, about 7 yards, and that it's one against Burnley.
It's getting closer,
isn't
it?
The first one was blocked on the line, but he still was there to react and get the second one as well, and that says everything about him. He missed a big header at the back post too, but very encouraging, and really nice to have that option, hopefully going forward, of him and or Nick Voldemort.
Listener John emailed in to the old email address, I will add, by the way, to say we've been given Big Nick a bit harsh treatment on the podcast, but then followed up to withdraw his complaint. he has scored goals, to be fair to him.
Yeah, and I don't really want people to sort of think we've been giving him a harsh treatment. You know, like, he's scored goals, and that's, you know, I've loved watching him. Some of the stuff that he does is wonderful. He's popped up with kind of big moments and some beautiful touches. The problem is, we've, particularly away from home, we've seen Newcastle play effectively without a striker, with nobody in the box. You know, Walter Marder, you know, the lovely thing about him is he wants to get involved. He wants to bring other players in. He's got that talent and he's got that skill. But Newcastle are, you know, came into this season still set up as a kind of high, hard-pressing team with a fluid forward who wants to kind of run at defenders and get into the box. And it's just been really difficult for him. I mean, I would, you know, I'd want to pay tribute to him. He had to come into the team far earlier than anticipated. That wasn't the plan. The plan was that Wisser starts the season, Walter Marder gets to kind of see how Newcastle play, you know, gets a bit of time on the training ground, and he comes in and becomes like a sort of wild card option for them. And of course, they haven't been able to do that. So he's clearly got a great personality. He's clearly, you know, settled in brilliantly. He's enjoying it. And, you know, hugely grateful that he scored those goals that he has. It's just away from home, it's been a tough watch sometimes because he just hasn't, you know, he is not a fox in the box. And we saw against Burnley that, you know, Wissa can play that role. And hopefully the two of them, yeah, two of them together can offer Newcastle just much more threat because they need that. They haven't threatened away from home.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Very, very happy to see the end of the Alexander Isak saga. Obviously, he's injured now. And I think a few of us, I'm not saying a few of us on this show, but a few of us in general need to let go of all of that now. I think it's time to move on. But more widely, we are shutting the door on a difficult 12-month for transfers, aren't we, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, you say that as the January transfer window opens, so hopefully that we are doing that.
Yeah,
so it's the door swinging from one way to the other. But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, particularly over the summer, last January, Newcastle couldn't, for the third successive transfer window, invest in the first team, or felt that they couldn't from a PSR perspective. Instead, Lloyd Kelly left, Miguel Almiron left, and then that allowed Newcastle to have a stronger financial position for the summer, which was then bolstered right at the very end by Isak going. But in the interim, they didn't have a sporting director, did not have an active CEO because of Darren Eales' ill health. Wish him all the best for 2026, by the way, just to mention him, and hopefully he's getting the treatment that he needs and that's having the effect. But for Newcastle, it was a bruising summer, and you get people saying, oh, you can't just keep mentioning the summer. I get that, but I also think that the effect on the team at the moment, it is transitional. Someone was saying to me the other day, how can you keep saying it's transitional? You know, they've had so many games by this stage. Like, yeah, but they are basically trying to work on the hoof. They haven't got any time on the training ground. They also, you can argue, some of the players that they signed, well, basically, as we said, as the window closed, Newcastle added squad depth. But did they improve the first 11?
Yeah.
Probably not. And I think that's been proven so far this season that you can't...
Newcastle have a weaker team.
Yeah.
We do sort of forget this when we're comparing it to last season. Newcastle have a weaker team. Plenty of other teams in the top half of the table have strengthened. Expecting Newcastle to be as good as or better than last season, it's not realistic. And yeah, okay, Isak's had a terrible time at Liverpool, but he was an astonishing player for Newcastle. And by taking him out of the team, you immediately suffer. It happened at the last minute. Perhaps we should have all seen it coming, but it happened at the last minute, and Newcastle have been playing catch-up ever since. So it is transitional. That doesn't mean it can't be better than it is, but it can only be transitional. And see, now I'm getting angry again thinking about transfers for last year. That's why I want to say goodbye to it. I mean, you know, by the end of this season, this will have been a season in its own right. They have to navigate it, and there has to be, you know, there has to be some positivity with it. It couldn't go on as it was, but yeah.
It hasn't just been a transitional year on the pitch, though, George, has it? Newcastle have had quite a lot of executive churn in the boardroom as well.
Well, that's it. And the two things are obviously tied closely together. I don't need or want to kind of go on a big rant again, but, you know, big clubs don't operate like this. It's two summers in a row, effectively, that Newcastle haven't had a sporting director, you know, for large chunks, or that they've had huge churn in the boardroom. You know, stability is a byproduct of being a well-run club, but Newcastle... So, you know, so you have to say that Newcastle haven't been well run. They've had big people leave in terms of Amanda Staveley, Mehrdad Gudusi. New people have come in. You know, the sporting director, there has to be some stability there. Ross Wilson has to bed in. He has to get on with work, and he has to be a lasting appointment.
Yeah.
Who is to blame for sporting directors coming and going is a podcast in its own right. But there needs to be some long-term roots put down. very encouraging what Ross Wilson has said so far. Same applies to David Hopkinson. They need to get on their jobs and you know, put down roots and bring a little bit of, you know, bring a bit of certainty to the top of the club, because that is the environment Eddie Howe and the players have had to work in, uncertainty.
It certainly is. We want to say goodbye to a general mood of grumpiness, Chris Woff, don't we? You want to talk about the tough question police. This is something that gets angled at journalists quite a lot, isn't it? Especially on social media. Why aren't you asking the tough questions, Chris?
Yeah, and I actually have a lot of sympathy for people who ask those, well, who make those sort of calls and say, what are the issues here? Why aren't these specifically being asked in a press conference? And I entirely get that, partly because people aren't necessarily in the room, so a lot of the press conferences are televised now, so people can see them afterwards, and perhaps it may be argued at certain points that we aren't asking the quote-unquote tough questions. I get the frustration, and I know that that is the sort of medium by which supporters feel that they can try and ask things of the manager and ask questions of it. The issue I suppose I have is that sometimes I do think that those questions are asked, and maybe they're asked in a politer way than some people would want, or some people feel they should be asked. But I also think that there needs to be a degree of decorum in dealing with a manager in those situations. And I also think the problem I have sometimes is, do people want a question to be asked so that they get an answer, which they actually want to listen to, or do they want a performative question? Do they want someone just to ask a very, quote-unquote, tough, difficult question just for the sake of saying it's been asked, to not really get a response of any positive note from Eddie Howe or whoever may be asked of it? And I think sometimes journalists can fall into that trap, and maybe there have been occasions over the last few weeks where questions have been angled in that sort of way, but also the other way, maybe sometimes the questions are a bit soft. So I entirely get all of that, but I don't think it's necessarily a fair reflection of it. I do think a lot of the questions are being asked, but I also think that, as I say, is it that you actually want questions to be answered and you actually want to hear what he has to say about tactics, for example, or do you just want it to be asked so that you can say he's been asked it, despite him maybe getting his back up and then not wanting to give a reasonable answer on it? Is it that you want the answer, or do you just want the question asked? Yeah. And I think there can be a subtle difference between the two.
Desperately trying to find a picture I created on my phone, but it was definitely over 10 years ago. It was sometime when Alan Pardew was manager, and I sort of did a fake picture of my notebook of hard questions, which included things like, you know, what is the square root of whatever? Is there life on Mars? Is there life on?
Yeah.
And I can't remember which player's brain it was that I slagged off. Good. But this is something that happens at all times when we reach the point in the cycle where people are grumpy with results. And, you know, Chris is right. There's ways and means, you know, people kind of get irritated about Eddie Howe being asked jokey questions, you know, what he had for his Christmas dinner or whatever like that. But some of those things have always traditionally been done to try and soften up a manager so that they're a bit more relaxed, so that they're more receptive to questions. And again, you can ask a soft question and get a hard answer. And it's about, you know, it's about kind of maximizing your time with a manager. You could go in and say, why were you so shit today? Why didn't you make substitutions? Why didn't you do this? But, you know, if what you want at the end of it is explanation for why something happened,
well, this is it.
You have to think about how you do it. Also, you have to say that Eddie Howe is very skilled at saying,
well, that's it. If we've learned anything about Eddie Howe over these last few years, it's that he will straight bat anything provocative or difficult or anything like that, won't he? He's very good at that.
Yeah.
It can be quite political with his answers at times.
And he doesn't tend to like my questions, even when they are quite sort of soft, touchy. He seems to react negatively to them. So, yeah, as we well know.
Maybe that's a resolution for 2026, Chris, is try not to piss Eddie Howe off quite as much.
No, I think I've probably failed. I'll have failed by the end of the Palace game on that one, I think. So,
having said all of that, chaps, and all of that negative stuff, 2025 will always be the year that Newcastle finally won a trophy. And that is pretty fucking special, if you ask me.
It has to go down as... now that we've exercised all that negative stuff, Taylor, we can just concentrate and remember the beautiful stuff, which, of course, is what 2025 will always be remembered for. It was the year Newcastle won their first trophy of any sort since 1969, their first domestic trophy for 70 years. What an incredible moment. What an incredible team who were able to do that, who contrary to my feelings still, my memories of the day, absolutely battered Liverpool, deserved to win. That Newcastle won on the pitch and off it in terms of the way supporters came into Wembley, determined to turn up. Everyone turned up. A brilliant day. Newcastle turned up in the semi-finals. Astonishing performances against Arsenal. And then, you know, to be on that kind of run of form already, but then to close out the season by getting back into the Champions League, just an incredible time. And, one big player left, but you don't want that to detract from what the team achieved. And I guess part of our feelings of sort of grumpiness, if that's what it is because we now know that Newcastle United can be winners. And so we judge them as winners. And if they don't win, it's painful. But yeah, an incredible moment, something I never thought I'd see. Yeah, just beautiful.
Football is very current and here and now, isn't it? And it's in your head at the moment, and what's happening with Newcastle at the moment is the thing you're thinking about the most. But we can't just move on from that win, that trophy, that season, as quick as that, in my opinion. It's an incredibly emotional year for me watching Newcastle United, and that no more than the that day at Wembley is just, that'll be burned into my being for the rest of my days. Like, I will never ever forget that moment. You know, that was when all of that time, all of those failures, all of that time when we struggled, all the time when we couldn't quite get it over the line, that was when it came to an end. And that was the moment, and that was probably why I got so emotional on that day, because it felt like suddenly everything was justified, and all of this time that I'd spent following Newcastle felt like it was worth it. And I'd waited my entire life for that moment, and I think a lot of us had. And, you know, unless you've been on this planet for a very long time, you've never seen Newcastle win a single thing beyond, you know, some ridiculous pre-season tournament that you don't give a shit about.
Tactical.
But that was proper, yeah. And it was important, and it was special. And I don't ever want to, like, forget about that or diminish that memory, because it means so much.
Yeah, and I also think that the timing of that it was in the season as well, the way that it worked out, that Newcastle didn't have that game the fortnight afterwards, after the international break, and that basically the entire fortnight became a celebration, which then culminated in the parade. That worked out really well, that Newcastle got to have that big celebratory moment back on Tyneside before they actually played the following week, whereas it could have been that it was all a bit rushed, and instead it just was basically that party atmosphere for that fortnight and what scenes they were for the parade. And yeah, being at Wembley that day, usually I try to separate the sort of, I've closed that bit of my brain off to a certain degree, which is a fan, because I think it's the best way that I try to do my job. But afterwards, for me, going back and seeing my dad, who'd been at the game with my brother and my sister in the room, and my brother-in-law in a pub, as I walked in, and my dad just in tears, because he'd thought this moment wouldn't come again. That, for me, was a moment that I will always remember from 2020. For that would be the abiding memory for me to have seen that, and to see what it means to so many people, everyone in the pub afterwards, everyone in the ground, tears of joy, people you speak to at home, where were you in the day of the final, what was it like, people saying that being on Tyneside, if you're actually out in the street, it was like lockdown, because nobody was on the street, everyone was in a fan park, or was in a pub, or was in the home, or was at Wembley, or was in London, wherever they were watching the game. But then also hearing the stories from around the world, we did a podcast where we spoke to everyone, hearing that, and those fans who don't necessarily have that even familial connection or connection to the region historically, but have adopted Newcastle as their side, or whatever reason, the connection they have to the club, hearing what it means to them and what it meant to so many different people of different generations. Yeah, that brings it all back home. And really, I think all of the messages we got on the podcast that you hear from those people, it just, yeah, to hear how much that victory touched and so many people, and for how much it meant, very, very special.
Yeah, and I try my best to be like Chris as well, and shut the personal out of the professional. And look, I've been doing this job for something like 32 years, and for most of that time, I've done that very, very well. There have been, you know, previous appearances at Wembley, I've got kind of upset, or I've got emotional, because, you know, seeing one's team in that environment is not something that comes around or has come around very often for Newcastle. And being in that sort of different environment, it's a sort of extraordinary feeling. And of course, those experiences previous experiences were kind of negative. Back if I go back to the 90s, Newcastle didn't really sort of turn up. And yeah, it was the thing that was missing. I mean, it was the one thing that was missing. Like, I've seen everything else. I've seen Newcastle finish second. I was reporting on the team then, but I, you know, still had a season ticket at that point. You know, I've seen Newcastle play brilliant football. I've seen a lot of mediocrity. I've seen a lot of Newcastle in what is now the Championship just being shit. I've seen Newcastle go, you know, not being too far away from going out of business. Seen the Ashley years. Seen, you know, seen some great managers. Seen some terrible managers. Seen some amazing footballers. Relegations, promotions. You know, the one thing was missing. I just wanted to know what it felt like. Was a trophy, and it's happened, and I still don't know what it feels like. I mean, that's the kind of weird thing. Still sort of hasn't properly sunk in. I think the parade was the closest that I kind of got to just, you know, those scenes. It was something like out of a Hogarth painting around St. James's. People, you know, crawling up lampposts, people on walls, people balancing, people absolutely pissed out of their skulls, people just happy, just the whole city out on the streets as the bus goes past. And it's like, oh my God. When you talk about those moments, I mean, I'll never forget 92, 93, 93, 94, just because of the feeling around the city. The same goes for the first year and a half, 2 years post-takeover, where every single win just felt magical. I love that feeling. You kind of want to keep hold of it forever, and you know you can't. I don't think whatever Newcastle go on to do from this point, and hopefully it's a lot more trophies, it won't feel the same as that first one. I just don't think it can. I'd like to find out, though. So please, if you're listening, you know, let's do it again. But, you know, just having that moment. And it was, you know, it has to change everything. It's like I wrote at the time, the clock stops for Newcastle at that point. The clock is reset. And so everything that I've been, you know, taught or you've come to believe about the club, don't win anything, try to win something. Don't, you know, it's like it's now. What is it now? It's now 1 year since Newcastle United won a major trophy. So let's try and end that drought as quickly as we can. And, you know, maybe I'm thinking too much about this. I'm overthinking it. Is there something in it about us wrestling with this identity now of what Newcastle United actually means? You know, we're not losers anymore.
Plucky underdogs.
We're not plucky underdogs anymore.
Yeah.
So what are we?
We have to figure that out, don't we?
Yeah.
Not only did the club secure a trophy, they also put together an astonishing run of form at the back end of the season when, let's be honest, they could have clocked off, couldn't they, and sat on the beach straight away. But they managed to get back in the Champions League as well, Chris, which in itself was a massive achievement.
Yeah, and if we're just putting it to the present moment, we'll have to hope that Newcastle are capable of sort of having an uplifting second half to the campaign like that, Premier League campaign like they did last year. And yeah, brilliant achievement, second time in 3 years, transformative again from a financial point of view, or very important from a financial point of view, and from a attracting players and keeping players perspective. Newcastle have put themselves in a position now as well where they're hopefully in a strong position to get into the knockout phase for the first time in the history. Now, you have to put that in context that the Champions League has changed format, and so is that as difficult as it was previously?
Yeah.
Arguably not, but for Newcastle to get there again financially would be important for them, and also once they're in the knockout phases, I don't think a lot of teams would fancy certainly coming to St. James's Park for one of those two legs, and they've got a chance of progressing in that. So huge, and that's the stage that they want to be on. They want to be on it every season. It's looking a struggle to get back there for 26-27, but they need to get more used to being in that competition. It has to be that is what they strive to do going forward.
2025 was also the year when everything changed for us, wasn't it? Pot on the Tyne went independent in 2025, and it's been an astonishing 6-8 months, however long it's been since we did that. We've got to say thank you to all of those people who've listened and followed us and joined in with this little adventure of ours. All of the people who've subscribed to the Extra Tyne, and those who pay to listen ad-free as well at podonthetyne.supportandcast.fm. Got to get the link in there, chaps, before you do anything. Make sure people follow the link. But it has been an astonishing few months for us, hasn't it? I mean, we won an award, for God's sake. Nobody thought that
behind
was going
to
happen.
Behind me to my left there.
Is that the award there?
Brilliant. Yeah.
It lives with Chris now, doesn't it? We're kind of doing like a shared custody thing of the award.
Similar, always wanted to know what it felt like to be an award winner. And now, I've done everything else. I've been called a twat on social media many, many times.
Oh, we've all had that.
And I just wanted to know what it feels like to be a winner. Yeah, no, it's just been a brilliant second half of the year. We had a lot of angst over the summer as well about what to do, how we go about doing what we do. But, you know, we've loved the fact that we've been able to sort of shake things up a little bit, hopefully keep the same sort of identity, bottom of the time. What is our identity? Chaos is our identity.
Consistently chaotic, yes. Yeah.
Consistently chaotic is our identity.
It's a transitional year, lads. Let's not make it too hard for ourselves.
I've loved the fact that we've able to kind of bring you match day pods and then try and do different things every now and again, just, you know, to showcase the fact that hopefully what we do is different to others. Obviously, massively assisted by Ollie, our fabulous producer. And yeah, we've really, really enjoyed it. So thanks to everyone who listens, and here's to more of the same in 2026.
On the different things, if you haven't listened to the Christmas, I think it was Christmas Eve, it came out, the Christmas edition of the podcast from George. That is a beautiful listen, a read to go with it on The Athletic itself as well, reflecting on this year, but also showing what we can do when we go out and interview people and speak to them and hear from them. And yeah, all the big people at the club speaking in quite emotional terms. So definitely go back and listen to that if you hadn't.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So let's look forward into 2026. What are we most excited for? Could this be an angst-free January? Will the squad be stronger at the end of it? At least now Newcastle United have a CEO and a sporting director in place for this one, George.
Yeah, so that makes a huge difference, doesn't it? Actually having somebody in the building capable of taking decisions. That would be kind of quite nice.
Always helps.
Angst-free, I don't think Chris would agree with that. I don't think any window is fully angst-free. I don't think anything can ever compare to last summer in terms of just that saga feeling. And yeah, you know, Newcastle have room for manoeuvre. Chris has kind of has talked about this in the past. I'm sure he'll do a bit more of that again. They have room for manoeuvre if necessary, if they feel the right deal is there. It's just good to know that there are kind of adults in charge, and so that, you know, decisions hopefully will be taken for the right reason. And they need to have a good transfer window. They've not had a good transfer window now for a very, very long time. If you go back to the early days post takeover, it felt like everything they touched turned to gold, and it's been the absolute opposite since then, you know, largely through PSR, but also through what happened last summer. They need to put consecutive good windows behind them.
Chris, could we see some old stagers depart in January, do we think?
Well, I see that Ollie, or maybe in George, whoever did the run notice, but Willett, Kraft, Trippier and Ashby. Can you call Harrison Ashby an old stager? I mean, he signed with Anthony Gordon, was paraded on the pitch in the January of 2023, that would have been, but has yet to make a first-team appearance for Newcastle, but he could well go. He is available. Joe Willock, yes, there's a chance he goes, interest from clubs in London in particular, but I'd say at this stage, probably looking more like he stays. If he was to go, that would potentially facilitate someone like Keith Smith or a midfielder coming in, but basically one requires the other to happen, and there hasn't been an official inquiry yet. Emil Kraft wanted by FC Copenhagen, that'll depend on players coming in. Same with Kieran Trippier, heavily linked again with going to Saudi Arabia. I do think that we're in the end game for Kieran Trippier at Newcastle. I think it'll either be in January or the summer that he will leave, but can only really be afforded to go defence-wise, particularly with the injuries they've got at the moment, if players are to be signed. I mean, it was interesting. There'd been slightly mixed messages over the course of the last week or so, in that Howe said publicly that basically the injury situation will partly dictate what Newcastle do. From noises the rest of the club is that, you know, the injury situation is not necessarily, or certainly won't affect massively what we do. It won't be the reason why we sign or don't sign players this month. I think, and I'm going to jump forward here to a further question in the runner, which is what do we expect to happen with incomes this month? As I said earlier, I think Newcastle might do one, two things potentially, Keith Smith or a creative midfielder, fullback cover, someone like Danois in midfield, or if they can sign a defender. They're looking at a lot of players in Europe at the moment, mainly versatile players who could play in a couple of different positions. Dyan Mathley at Toulouse, he's only 19, he's left back, sort of come centre-half, and he wouldn't come in necessarily as a starter. I think it would be to cover in those positions. But when you see Lewis Hall go down injured at Burnley, and there's that immediate concern, the drop-off that Newcastle have, Livramento and Hall have only played four games together all season, and Newcastle are transformed when they have them in the side. I actually think that, and there's been some downplaying of expectations from inside the club as to whether they do anything. I think it's important Newcastle do something, because I think it gives everyone a bit of a lift, even if it is a reserve left-back or a promising left-back. I think it just adds a freshness that I think Newcastle need at this stage, given all the games they've got, given everything that's gone on so far. It gives a freshness internally, that sort of fresh dynamic that Ehau talks about, but also externally to support us, to see that they are trying to do something. And I don't mean going silly. I don't mean putting themselves in a PSR position at risk. Not that they are in that. They don't need to sell anyone, but and not massively affecting their summer business. But I do think if they can do something this month, I just think it sends a stronger positive message than if they go through the month without doing anything. I just feel like they could do with that lift for everyone.
Totally agree with you. It's not about doing something for the sake of it. If you go back a year, though, Newcastle ended the January window weaker. Now, that's astonishing, bearing in mind what they went on to do the rest of the season, but losing Kelly, losing Almiron. So they ended the window effectively on the back foot. They definitely ended the summer on the back foot. You know, they obviously spent a shitload of money by the end of, by the end of it, but they were on the back foot. If they can end this month on the front foot, either taking decisions about players leaving on their own terms or bringing somebody in, there needs to be a lift. Now, there's a lot of talk about manager and the coach. You know, fresh faces help a manager, you know, too. And they drive competition. They change the atmosphere around the dressing room. All of those things are, like, really important for Newcastle.
We talked about the old stagers, Chris. Some of them still have plenty of life in them, don't they? Nick Pope was back in between the sticks against Burnley, and there was 200 up for Joe Linton as well.
Yeah, Joe Linton, I think, has been poor for most of the season. I criticised him, but I think he was brilliant at Burnley, exactly what was required. I thought he was the best of the midfield, which maybe struggled. I thought he added something different and was part of the reason why Newcastle got the win, not only his goal, but the way he went about things, made a couple of big defensive clearances as well.
I really, really enjoyed him pissing Kyle Walker off at corners. That just made me feel so warm and lovely inside. I was like, go on, wind him up more, see what happens.
It felt like a warm hug.
Reliable, just, oh, he's back. There he is.
And for Nick Pope, yes, there was a lot of calls at the end of November that maybe it was the right time for him to come out of the team, and maybe he has benefited from that sort of month out. But I also think during that time, you've seen also what he brings to Newcastle. He makes big saves. He's huge. He's in important moments, and I think that has a positive effect on his teammates. So, yeah, hopefully he is settled back in as number one. And yes, we know that his distribution with his feet is not great, but I think that he can win points for Newcastle between now and the end of the season, and that's what they need him to do. And if they're going to start getting away results positively on a consistent basis, they need to keep clean sheets, and he's huge for that.
We talked at the start of the show about January's run of home games. It feels like a big opportunity, George, doesn't it?
Yeah, there are 9 matches for Newcastle in January, so it's another absolutely crammed month. But most of them at home, so we've got Palace at home, Leeds at home in the league, then Bournemouth in the FA Cup, then Man City in the League Cup. Yeah, it's just an opportunity they have to take. I mean, it's, you know, and an opportunity to build momentum. We talked a lot about the away form. You don't want them to put too much pressure on themselves at home, but they are good at home. And so here's their opportunity to take advantage of it. And they need to climb back up the table. And so I'm looking forward to seeing Newcastle at home and hopefully winning matches again.
And you would hope that home form, if they do string a few wins together, that spills over into the away form and you know, one thing it breeds positivity in the other, doesn't it?
That's exactly it. I mean, so it's four games at home now in a row. Obviously, the last one of those is against Man City, so that's a really important game. It's not an easy game, but you know, if they come through those fixtures with good results, they then go to Wolves, and you could be talking about a very different team in terms of self-belief and confidence. We'll see.
We will. Cups as well. Can we defend the Carabao Cup, Chris? Can we progress in the Champions League? Can we cope with the FA Cup? As George says, there's a game every 5 minutes in January, and it's going to take a lot of effort, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the answer to all three of those is yes to a certain extent, although I do think something has to give player-wise. I've said this before, the FA Cup game against Bournemouth, I would be making significant changes for that match, still in the hope that Newcastle can get through, but I think they're already in the semi-final of the Carabao Cup, so they have to put greater resources into that for now than they do in the Bournemouth game, so I'd be making quite big changes for that. Carabao Cup's going to be very, very difficult, two legs against Man City. They need to start well in that home game, given their record at the Etihad, but they are capable. They showed it against Arsenal last year. They can raise themselves for big occasions. Can they progress in the Champions League? I'd like to think that they would from this position. I think it would be failure from this position if they don't get through. PSV are in really good form in the Netherlands, massively leading that division now. They've been up and down in the Champions League, so they've had some fantastic results and some terrible ones, so that's not going to be necessarily straightforward. But at St James's Park, I back Newcastle to get a positive result, and a positive result should be just about enough to get them through.
George, what should be a realistic target for the remainder of the season? Do you think Newcastle can squeak back into those European places?
I think that's going to be tough. I mean, they're not out of reach, are they, in terms of points? But the problem is they're just not putting consistent matches together. Now, I think things could look very different by the end of this month. And if it does, then I would back them because, you know, they've shown before that they can take advantage of kind of big moments. And yeah, but this is the month where this is moving month, isn't it? Because this is the month where they have these home games, because they've got some incredibly tricky away games to come. I mean, top 10 in the league, you know, that's barely a par score. You know, top eight, I would take that, I think, from this point. I mean, I want to see Newcastle win something else. That's really the thing that has always kind of driven me as a fan. I want to see Newcastle win things.
You're saying Champions of Europe, George. Is that what you're going for this season? Champions of Europe?
Well, we'll see. You know, we'll see.
I mean, Spurs fans would call themselves champions of Europe and won the Europa League, which George and I were sort of talking about. It's a bit of a weird thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that feels like a big ask. But the two semi-finals against Arsenal last season were extraordinary. Now, if Newcastle can put two performances like that in against Man City, why not? I mean, that's what I want. The FA Cup is the thing that I've always really wanted to. I'm not fussy, let's be honest. But the FA Cup is the one thing one trophy I'd have always loved Newcastle to win. But yeah, is that the thing that gives this time? Maybe. But give me a cup and I don't really care about the rest. But, you know, top eight and a cup.
They are capable. They're definitely capable. We have to talk about the rise and rise, Chris, of Lewis Hall, who, let's be honest, is just a bloody good footballer, isn't he?
He's very, very good, and I think that it sounds like when he was coming through as a midfielder, he wasn't necessarily keen initially on the switch to full back, wing back, as he maybe initially was, but I think you can see the benefits of that, the technical side he's brought from midfield, but also the athletic ability he has to get up and down the line. And yeah, I think he's been consistently excellent for Newcastle now for 12 to 18 months when he has been fit. He's come back from a very serious injury and doing very well, had a couple of stop-start moments with injuries, but yeah, fingers crossed he stays fit, because when he's fit and available, Newcastle are a different side, as we keep saying, with those fullbacks.
I mean, it's just astonishing to remember last season, just while we're talking about 2025, that when Anthony Gordon was suspended and Lewis Hall injured, Newcastle went into the League Cup final without their first choice left side, and we've got no chance. It's like this is going to be another, you know, one of those games where everything's kind of going wrong, and you know, for Newcastle to kind of get beyond that was absolutely incredible. They do have that capacity inside themselves to tough it out when it matters. But, you know, Lewis Hall, we've seen over the course of the year just what an important and brilliant young player he is.
Certainly is. Right then, Charles, first game of 2026, Palace, and like us, no longer trophy virgins either. Should be an interesting one, Chris.
Yeah, and they literally were trophy virgins, I think, weren't they? I think they hadn't won a single major trophy.
Well, no, they weren't literally trophy virgins because I don't think they actually had sex with a trophy.
Oh, I'm going to ignore God. That comment. But Oliver Glasner has done a wonderful job there. They are a very good side. But they came up to St. James's Park and collapsed a little bit last season. Newcastle hammered them. It'd be nice to see something similar. I doubt it's going to be. I think it'll be a lot tighter this game. But hopefully Newcastle go into it full of positivity from the Burnley game. And I think they are capable of winning this. But I don't think it's going to be straightforward. I think it could be a nervy affair. I think there'll be goals in it for both sides. So fingers crossed Newcastle come out on the right side of that.
Lovely stuff. Right, then that's just about it. Get in touch. The email is podnatine@gmail.com. And we're on Twitter X and Blue Sky, as well as Discord for our subscribers. We'll be back this weekend with a matchday pod for that Palace game. Thank you very much for your time, chaps. And Happy New Year yet again, George Corkin, or just Corkin as we're calling him, in 2026.
Yes, Happy New Year to you as well, Turner.
Very good. And Happy New Year to you, Christopher Woff.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year to all of our listeners out there.
Absolutely. Right, that's it. Thank you very much for listening. Have a lovely, lovely New Year, and we shall speak to you very, very soon. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, take care. Goodbye.
Doesn't matter.
Jesus Harper Christ. Also featured on the main one. It's good start this.
Yeah, I know. Well, I've been concentrating on the running order, not actually speaking.
Flow. I'm in the flow.
Yes, that's right. Newcastle. Yes, Newcastle have submitted £1 million panning permission.
Panning permission. Fucking hell. That's a big pan, isn't it? £1 million.
Well, I know what the end of the show is going to sound like. Anyway.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No.